This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Today is the third day of April 2020, and it is a day in which we're still calculating what will happen with coronavirus. Yesterday's numbers from the state went way up. 9,000 people now, to be exact, 9,150 people in Louisiana have tested positive, 310 deaths. In total cases, Louisiana is now fifth in the nation, in a state with only 1.4% of the national population. We do wish Representative Begala well. We understand he has been put on a ventilator. We'll talk more in the hour with former State Senator Mike Robichaux, who's from the same area. And, of course, we're going to have more of this before we have less. And if you'd like to join the conversation today, we encourage you to do so. 877-217-5757. Today, the New York Times, in its business section, has a headline that reads, "Vanished, the coronavirus outbreak has in a matter of days wiped out more jobs than the worst months of the last recession. Initial unemployment claims filed in the United States last week brought the two-week total to nearly 10 million, which amounts to more than the working population of Los Angeles, Houston, and Chicago combined. And as stated, this is just the start. But there are some opportunities, and that's why Amin Walker of First Financial and Accounting Services is in the house and ready to take your calls if you so wish, or you can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. Amin and First Financial have been at times an underwriter on WRKF, and he is here to talk about what happened last week with Congress passing a $2.2 trillion bailout signed into law by the president. And it has some opportunities for workers and for businesses. And let's begin with the workers, the $1,200 checks. Who gets those?
$1,200 checks will be issued to all adults over the age of 18 years old that made less than $75,000 in taxable adjusted gross income last year. If it's a married couple, obviously it's $150,000. And those numbers start to fade out by 5% all the way up until they make $99,000, and then they would get nothing. So if they fall in the middle, they'll get about half of that. So it'll be prorated. And then they also get $500 for each child that is an actual dependent on their tax return.
And this PPP opportunity, I think that stands for Payroll Protection
Plan.
Okay.
Payroll Protection Plan. One last thing on the individual. So, Jim, people do have to have filed their 2018 or 19 tax returns or be currently receiving Social Security to get that money. So if anybody's behind on their taxes, they need to get those filed or they will not get the money.
So right now the deadline for filing the 2019 returns are
is July the 15th.
They've been moved to July 15th.
Right, and if you haven't filed 2019 yet, they will use 2018. But if you have not filed 18 yet, then you will not receive anything.
Gotcha. Do the checks just arrive in the mail?
If you filed on your tax returns with direct deposit, then they have that information. Or if you're getting direct deposit of Social Security, they will be direct deposit. Other than that, they will get a check in anywhere from 1 to 6 months because they can only mail out 20 million checks a month.
What about those who do it the old way, the snail mail pace? How
right,
do they get their money?
They're going to get a check. And, again, that's going to take anywhere from 1 month to 5 months because, again, they can only mail out 20 million checks per month, the IRS has stated.
877-217-5757, and each day we hear about people dying in our midst, and many of them from coronavirus. A death reported this morning. We don't know yet if it is coronavirus. Reported as heart complications. The great Bill Withers. Bill Withers is dead. And I mean, you and I grew up with Bill Withers.
We did.
Yeah,
we did.
Lean on me.
And use me.
Lovely Day.
Right.
Well, that's my favorite Bill Withers song. He was married to Denise Nicholas of Room 222.
He was.
Yeah, that didn't work out real well. They were a wonderful couple for a while, though. Hey, he took her from Rosie Grier, too. But wow. Back to the PPP.
Yes. So there are two different types of loans that are available for business owners. Also, not only business owners, though, if you are an independent contractor at a company and receive a 1099 from them, you can also file loans under this program as well. So the first is the economic injury disaster loan. We would encourage everybody to go right onto the SBA.gov website, click on the link for coronavirus, and make sure you apply for that. One of the features of that is a basically a free grant of $10,000. If you're approved for the loan, great, but even if you're not approved for the loan, you do not have to pay back the $10,000, and that's supposed to come within 3 days. So that's a wonderful thing people should do. The second one, though, is the big one. That is the PPP loan. It is an actual 7A SBA loan. You do need to go directly through your bank. You cannot apply online. Please, if you see something online that's asking you to apply, that's not a bank. That's a broker trying to, you know, get you to fill out an application with them. One of the features of this is that there are no fees for this loan, no bank fees, no SBA fees. But if you get caught up applying online and you have a broker, they will charge you a fee. So all make right. sure you do it through the bank.
Well, if I have a bank, that's one way of doing it, and I've been contacted by my bank. But if my accountant is doing it and the accountant is using a different bank, is that acceptable?
It is acceptable. The only stipulation is that the person has to have a deposit relationship with the bank. So whether that's immediate or at the time of closing or right before closing, that is fine. You know, in our case, we are trying to put everybody with you know, their own banks, that they don't have things spread around town. But, you know, there are some lenders that are not doing the PPP plan. Some lenders that are SBA approved but won't do SBA loans because they're scared of being left holding a bag if something goes bad with the loan.
All right. And there are some who are doing it, though.
There are plenty who aren't doing it. And, you know, one of the things that seems to be a concern is people don't want to go into the bank. They don't want to go take documents. They don't want to sit with people. They don't want to sign paperwork. you need to look for a lender. There are some lenders like Fidelity Bank that are doing everything online. So you can just go on, put the application in, upload your documents, and when the loan is approved in a day or so, they will send you a DocuSign. You sign a DocuSign, and they put the money in your account. So it's very simple, and that's really the relationship you're trying to look for. You don't want to have to go to the bank to do this because, of course, you increase your exposure.
All right, here's a question from Tom on Blue Bonnet saying that he went into his bank yesterday or tried to and couldn't do it. He had to go through the drive-thru, so, and he said he needed some documents to be taken care of. So what happens, it's a little harder to do this, and I've experienced the same thing. A little harder to do this when you're going through a drive-through window.
Well, yeah, it's almost impossible to do through a drive-through window. If your bank does not have regular lobby hours at this point or is not letting you come in and sit down with a banker, you're going to either need to see about doing it, you know, online with them, or you'd need to call your bank and ask them if that option is available. And then if not, you can do it at any SBA and, you know, at any SBA bank that's doing the approvals.
877-217-5757 for Amin Walker of First Financial Tax and Accounting Services in Baton Rouge. He has clients all over the country, and he, of course, is like many other people in the accounting industry. They are trying to help their clients, and there are some opportunities. Here's a good question from a listener, and this is from Hal in Monroe listening online. Is it possible if we don't get in early on our request for a loan that the government will run out of money?
You know, that is a possibility. You know, the maximum loan amount on this program per company is $10 million, although, you know, there will be very few companies that do that. I would suspect most loans will be somewhere around $50,000 to $100,000. So it's possible that they will run out. You know, your option is you need to go ahead and apply and get approved, and then you have 30 days to make a decision as to, you know, whether or not you want to fund the loan right then or wait, which, you know, for restaurants and for barbers and people that are closed right now, you know, they would want to get approved right now but go ahead and not fund until April 30th so they can take advantage of the loan forgiveness over the next 8 weeks.
All right. Amin Walker of First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. And a question from Ari about the uncertainty of everything right now. How long will it take to get the money back? Do we know?
To get the money back?
To get the loan.
You know, I talked to the banker that I deal with most regularly this morning, and they said it would be within a day or two of actually having a completed package. But, of course, that's going to depend on how quickly you get your applications in. The longer you're in line, you know, the longer you're going to have to wait to go through underwriting.
Now, are there opportunities independent of this?
There are. There are several different things. I mentioned the idle already. There is the state of Louisiana just announced that it has a program. It is coming out with a program, and that's going to be administered through banks as well, where they'll do loans up to $100,000. And then you've got to remember all the grants. Facebook is doing $100 million worth of free ad credits. Google just announced yesterday it's doing $300 million in loans and ad credits on Google.com. So there are several different sources out there. You just need to search them, seek them, and find those opportunities.
You deal with helping businesses stay afloat and giving strategy to make thriving businesses even better. That's what Amin strives to do. But let's face it, there's some businesses who won't be able to withstand this, so they need money fast. And is 2 months a panacea, or is it like Bernie Sanders, we're going to be back in another couple of months with another big stimulus plan? What do you think?
You know, I think there are going to be three different people with this. There are going to be the people who really could survive without it, but it's just going to help a lot. There are the people who might be going under, and this will save them. And then there's going to be a large group of people that this is not going to help. It's just going to get them through this next 2 months.
We'll be back after this time out with more Talk Louisiana.
They keep trying to tell me.
This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757. Today's the start of the payroll protection program from the federal government based on the $2.2 trillion stimulus plan passed last week by Congress. Huge amount of cash going into the economy to try to preserve it amid coronavirus. Biggest infusion of cash in the history of our country, exceeding the TARP plan in 2008 by a fairly good margin. Amin Walker is with us for a few more moments from First Financial and Accounting Services. We do have some questions online, and I'll try to give him the questions that have been provided by listeners. But there were some new wrinkles last night, I understand. What happened last night?
There were, and you know, I don't even know if all the wrinkles have been ironed out yet, but they were. They finalized several things. You know, prior they were saying the interest rate would be no more than 4%. Then they came back and said it was going to be 0.5%, and now last night we got final word, supposedly, that it's going to be 1%. The term, of course, went down from 10 years to 2 years. Initially, when they had us, the way this PPP loan is going to be calculated is basically you're going to take your payroll for the last 12 months, you're going to divide that by 12 to get an average monthly payroll, and multiply that by 2.5. And that is the amount of the actual loan that you'll be able to get. Now, there are some strange things. We have to pull out earnings in excess of $100,000. If any of the employees earned more than that, you're going to be able to use some of this money for other things like rent, utilities, or mortgage interest. So there are some things that you can do now and things that you can't do now. So you got to be really careful about how you calculate this.
Byron Nichols writes, is there a chance of duplication benefits if you apply for the disaster loan and the paycheck protection loan?
Okay, so yes. There is a duplication. You can, using the same tax ID number, apply for both of those loans. Now, you cannot have both of those loans at the same time. So typically what we're recommending is people apply for the injury disaster loan. And once they get that loan, then they can go ahead and do the PPP loan, because they can take up to $10,000 of that EIDL loan and move it over into the PPP loan, which adds to the amount of the PPP loan. It does not subtract. So in that way, they can have both some of the benefit from the EIDL and the PPP at the same time.
This PPP opportunity, the way I understand it, and you're the authority, you're the one who's filling out forms as we speak, 8 weeks of payroll, right?
Correct.
So
what they're going to do to calculate this, again, we take their average monthly payroll from the last 12 months, multiply that by 2.5. That is your loan amount.
And you get that for 8 weeks.
Correct. Well, you know, you get that initially right away. You get that whole, let's
but
say you're 200,000.
Over an 8 week period.
Correct. You get all $200,000 as soon as your loan is approved. Then you use that money to pay to make payroll, to pay your rent or mortgage interest, and to pay your utilities over the next 8 weeks. At the end of that 8 weeks, whatever you have spent on that payroll, utilities, and rent will be subtracted from the $200,000, for instance, that you borrowed, and you will be responsible for the rest. If you've used it all, then there's no problem. You actually are forgiven for the whole thing. But you know, there are a lot of catches with it. Not more than 25% can be paid for rent and interest payments on, mm-hmm. on mortgage and utilities.
75%.
So 75% has to go of the forgiveness amount has to go to payroll. The other thing is you have to maintain certain levels of payroll. The purpose of this is so that you can either keep your employees or bring back employees that you previously had let go. So you have to restore your current payroll for the employees to within 25% as well. Otherwise, you do not get the forgiveness.
Within 25%?
Right. So in other words, if you were spending, if your average monthly payroll was $50,000 for, or let's use a round number of $100,000, you have to pay people at least $75,000 over that 8 weeks.
Okay.
Otherwise,
so
it's not 75%
forgiven. 75% within $25,000.
Right. You have to have no more than 25% of that money spent on other items.
Well,
so 75% has to be paid on payroll.
A lot of these restaurants, for example. Barbershops. Mm-hmm. They're completely shut down, so their employees are probably not being paid. How does it affect them?
Well, what we're recommending for them is, again, you do not have to take the loan as soon as you're approved. So go ahead and submit your application, get approved, and then take your loan proceeds in 30 days or so. Hopefully in 30 days, the ban in Louisiana will be lifted and those businesses can be back to normal, and their eight-week period starts from when they take the money from the loan.
All right. I've got several questions. I won't be able to get to all of them for Amin Walker, but I'm sure he will be back. But this program, a listener asks, applies to nonprofits as well, does it not?
It applies to private nonprofits, yes.
And I think the interest rate is lower for nonprofits, I believe.
Well, actually, I haven't seen anything where they've changed that now. But in the injury, the EIDL program, it is, because it's 3.75% for profit businesses, and nonprofits are 0.7 are 1 point lower at 2.75. But for the PPP, I've only seen the one rate of 1%.
But as you say, if you have certain levels. Basically 8 weeks of expenses, most of the expenses, not all.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of these extraneous expenses don't count.
Well, most of the expenses won't count unless it's the rent, the utilities, or mortgage interest, or payroll. That's what counts, not meals and entertainment, not supplies, nothing else that has to do with the business.
Well, thank you, Amin Walker, and we will be in touch with you to have a return visit, because this is obviously a moving target, but it's going to be a interesting and fascinating, and in some cases, tragic development for some businesses who won't make it despite the infusion of help. But the government, Uncle Sam, has made its effort to help the cause, and we'll see how it works. 877-217-5757 is your number, and we're joined now by former State Senator Mike Robichaux, one of the most versatile people I've ever met. He's a military veteran during the Vietnam era. He played football at LSU as a walk-on, was an all-SEC defensive end. He's a medical doctor, 45 years of service, and he was a state senator from South Louisiana down in Bayou Country for 5 years, and even survived a jihad led, and that was the word that Governor Mike Foster used to try to get rid of him, a jihad to get rid of Senator Mike Robichaux. And he is here to talk about what's going on, and Senator, 10 years ago this month, your area was hit profoundly by the Deepwater Horizon crisis and the oil spill that happened. How's it looking right now?
Well, things have recovered. I think for the most part, a lot of the health issues that I witnessed at the time are still existing, but they've stabilized for the most part for most people. Stabilized with them being permanently ill and will be affected for the rest of their lives. But there's not much being done about it. There's not much being said about it at this point. And I'm not involved in managing too many of these people at this point in time.
Well, you have been an ear, nose, throat specialist for 45 years, and I know you recently stepped back a bit, and you're working under contract with your former office. And right now, a lot of people in your line of work are on the sidelines. How are you on the sidelines, or are you still seeing patients?
No, I'm on the sidelines completely. My wife has put me out to pasture. We have a young grandchild that she cares for, and her fears are well-founded because she doesn't want me running around and bringing these things home. I've had I've worked pretty much 365 days a year. I on my weekends off, I have a little free clinic in the mornings that I see patients for a couple of hours on Saturdays and Sundays and holidays and so forth. So we've constantly been exposed to people, and a contagious problem like this does not is a nightmare type scenario for us because I'm probably exposed to all of these things all the time. So she's I think correctly sent me out to pasture. And by the way, I've had more free time since this thing started than I've had any time before in my life. So it's been a vacation for me. I hate to say, in light of this tragedy, that I'm on vacation, but that's what it's meant.
Well, we're going to talk with Senator Mike Robichaux. If you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757. And Jim Mayer has sent me a message last night with an article attached about whether medical professionals, if their oath is still valid during a pandemic, do they have to treat patients? We'll talk with Senator Robichaux about that as medical professionals are going into overdrive and risking their lives. Back after this pause for the news. This is Jim Inkster with Matt Doyle, our producer for Talk Louisiana, and our special guest for a little while longer is Dr. Michael R. Robichaux, Sr. His son is a doctor, and following his graduation from LSU, where he was a walk-on defensive end on the Tiger football team of Charles Y. McClendon, Dr. Mike attended medical school, honor grad student of LSU Medical School, and he has been in practice since 1975. Ear, nose, and throat specialist, and was a member of the National Guard, as I mentioned, for 10 years during the Vietnam era, and 5 years as a state senator. So a man with a rich life in Louisiana, and he loves his people. And down on the bio, the one of the senators, lawmakers, Representative Bagala, is battling coronavirus and unfortunately has been placed on a ventilator. And Mike Robichaux, a listener, has asked, when somebody is put on a ventilator, is that just a matter of time, or do some of those people come off and eventually live to fight another day?
I wish I could give you a statistic on that, but I think the majority of people that are put on vents probably come out of it. Excuse me. That's not necessarily a death predictor. Excuse me.
Okay. I hope you're okay.
No, I'm fine. I'm counting on Reggie getting better.
Well, let us hope so. And Senator Mike Robichaux, as mentioned, is on the sidelines for the first time in a 45-year medical career. Yesterday, the governor mentioned that the 42% rise in cases in one day was largely the rise was responsible because of the testing logjam that led to a surge of new cases being reported. But those numbers are going to go up exponentially, and we're talking 100,000, 240,000 Americans who will die of this at some point. And that means in Louisiana, where we have more than 5% of the national cases, if that were the case, more than 10,000 people in Louisiana would die from coronavirus. Right now, we have 310 souls who have been lost. And those who are of a certain age and a certain weight, if they smoke, if they have diabetes, they're all more at risk than others. But Dr. Robichaux, we are seeing some people who seemingly were in good shape falling prey to this. Is it a case in which everybody has to be wary?
Well, everyone definitely has to be wary. This is it's a new ball game, really, with this particular virus. Normally, I think recent years we lost about 90,000 people died in the United States of the flu. Okay, these are viral infections. and everybody gets this lecture when they come into my office. This is viral. Antibiotics can't kill viruses. We're going to put you on an antibiotic because it's going to stop secondary pneumonias or sinus, you know, whatever the case might be. But it's not going to kill the virus itself. Your body's going to have to build up resistance to this. And at the beginning of the flu season, the viruses, and this is something that concerns me, the viruses, you've got a few severe viruses and you've got a few very, a lot of very mild ones. But as the season goes on, the severe ones hang around a lot longer. So the strains that are much, much more virulent are the prevalent ones at the end of the season. So towards the end of the flu season, that's when I see my worst infections and the ones that last the longest and are the most severe. So I'm a little concerned about that phenomena with what's happening right now with this. I'm fascinated by the characteristics of this new virus and the fact that it's so virulent and is killing so many young, healthy, relatively healthy people. And it's not just attacking the elderly and the people that have pre-existing illnesses. It's obviously attacking them preferably and then and more effectively than anyone else. But we have young, healthy males that are being ill who would be the least likely person to get sick in a normal situation.
Now, what about the prospect of a medical professional saying, look, this is a whole different ball game. This isn't what I signed up for. And by the way, very few are doing that. Most people are doing what they do. They're doing what they can to help people in a time of need. But in a pandemic, do all those oaths you take as a doctor, do they apply?
I think so. I think I don't think they're having a deficiency of physicians out there now. I haven't heard of anybody having a problem of that nature. And I realize that there's doctors that are being overworked, but these are the people that are already in these fields. I wouldn't know how to run a respirator. I haven't done this type of thing since I was in medical school and in my residency. And I don't, and the equipment has changed so dramatically that I would be hard pressed to know what the nurses know. Matter of fact, I know I don't know what the nurses know in pursuit of these things. So on the forefront of this, doctors such as myself, especially guys that are in their mid-70s, are really not the guys that are going to be out there fighting these battles and these wars. But I think if push came to shove and if there were situations where doctors were necessary that for doing things that we're skilled to do, I don't think there'd be any problem getting us to mobilize and to go to work for the common good.
Steve Wynum, former budget director in St. Francisville, says, I want to commend Dr. Robichaux for his service as a state legislator. He was a true representative of his constituents without regard to personal concerns, a rarity in my experience. So that's a nice one. And Jim Mayer, who I mentioned, asks about the stability of rural hospitals. Are they in danger of being closed because of the support that is waning? What do you think?
I haven't heard any of this yet. I think the hospitals would probably stay relatively busy. And so I don't think that their finances are going to be a big problem, except for from the standpoint of the ability of the patients to pay for their services. But that's something that exists anyhow. As long as we have insurances that are still in force, and I think a lot of insurances are still in force, I think the hospitals will be okay for the time being anyhow.
Now more than 1 million cases reported around the world, and that number will go up with 55,000 deaths around the world. And the United States, of course, now leads the world in number of cases, 245,000. Spain is now second with 117,000, and that's not even half of what the U.S. has reported. Italy, 115, Germany, 87,000. In deaths, the U.S. is third behind Italy and Spain. And the rate of death in the United States right now is 2.5%. Is that basically what you understand that is going to be the norm for this?
That's what it sounds like right now, and that's fascinating because I mean, it's just unbelievable that it is that severe. You realize that when this first came about, I looked up the grip, G-R-I-P-P-E, and that was the name of the influenza that attacked the world in 1918 or 1917, whenever it was.
1918, yeah.
Well, I think it came during the war, and I think it, but anyway, it killed 50 million people, okay? And they don't have accurate data to the exact number, so it's between, 50 million was a conservative thing. I think we had 670,000 Americans.
That's correct.
Died of the Spanish flu. Unbelievable. So this is a baby problem compared to what we have. Now, they didn't have any way to manage these problems, didn't have any of the medications, and yet we don't have anything specific that's useful for any antiviral agents that are useful for this as far as we know of. There may be some things that'll be useful in the future. This business of using colchicine, you never know with these things. You hear these all the time. As a doctor, you get sort of frustrated and you say, what about this? What about that? And other thing. The colchicine may have a use for this, but that's antimalarial medicine that's been around for a long time.
Now, in state cases, New York leads the pack, 93,053 cases. New Jersey, second, 25,590. California, 11,207. Michigan, 10,791. And Louisiana, 9,150. In deaths, New York, 2538. New Jersey, 537. Michigan, 417. Louisiana, 310. California, 246. Actually, Washington is fifth with 272. So we have passed Washington, where this began in a big way, where 6,585 cases are known. And we're ahead of California in deaths, a state with 40 million people. We have 4.7 million people in Louisiana. Mardi Gras appears to have been a big culprit in this in Louisiana. And Senator Robichaud, what do you say about people who live in the New Orleans area? Some folks in Baton Rouge don't want them coming this way, and they don't want people living in Baton Rouge to go there. But in a free society, we have a hard time putting the clamps on people's activities.
Well, I'm going to give a shout-out for the governor. I've listened to a lot of politicians talk about this, and no one have I heard speak clearer or more succinctly about his plans for what we need to do. And I think he is on top of things from the get-go. And has done a commendable job and so forth. So really proud of him. And I think to the extent that you can control these things, we shall and we will do it. And and living in a free society, we're not going to be able to stop people from doing everything. But we do know this. The statisticians and the our epidemiologists know what it takes to slow this thing down and stop it. And we've just got to the best of our ability do these things and live with the severe, severe consequences otherwise.
Well, thank you, Senator. Dr. Mike Robichaud. We'll be talking soon, I'm sure, but we'll be back after this time out with more Talk Louisiana on WRKM. Familiar voice of Bono of U2, song about the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, April 4, 1968, Memphis, Lorraine Motel. Dr. King was 39, and that's 52 years ago. Tomorrow will be the anniversary of one of the dark days in American history. And Bono is a gentleman who is famous, we know, since 1978. The U2 frontman and arguably one of the most recognizable people on the planet. And he's done a lot of things to help people in the world, including founding NGOs to help Africa's poor. The book that we are featuring right now is called Religion Around Bono, from Dr. Chad Seals, Associate Professor for Religious Studies at the University of Texas at Austin. And good morning to you, Professor Seals.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, it's nice to talk to you. The book is mentioned as Religion Around Bono, Evangelical Enchantment and Neoliberal Capitalism. This guy was an outsider in Ireland during the violence of the 1970s. You obviously have been interested in him for some time and interested enough to write a book about it. He is one of the most fascinating and famous men on the planet.
Absolutely. Yeah, one of my main interests in the book is thinking through exactly what you're talking about and his promotions of love and justice and references to Dr. King, and just looking at the sort of complicated economic layers that blend themselves from the cultural expression of the music into the on-the-ground realities of those economic policies. So if you look at a place like Louisiana or the institution of LSU, one of the things that strikes me about Bono is that he's a placeholder now for the civil rights movement. And what does it mean when we've lost the message that was part of Dr. King's message, which was about the strengthening of public services and organized labor? And it's important to remember that Dr. King, on the eve of his assassination, was in Memphis supporting a sanitation workers' strike. And in his speech or sermon was asking those in the audience to take their money out of white-owned banks and put them in African-American-owned banks to stop buying products from companies like Coca-Cola that had segregationist practices. So that part of the message has been lost, and that's one of the main interests in the book, is this question of religion and capitalism and how can we give good gifts in the midst of complicated economic policies that we oftentimes don't know what are the implications and impact on the ground.
The book is Religion Around Bono, from Dr. Chad Seals of the University of Texas. How spiritual is Bono?
That's a great question. And the way to think of it is he's spiritual but not religious, which resonates with the demographic that are U2 fans up into more younger, the millennials as well, which is this reaction to organized religion and seeing religion as something that gets in the way of God. So to be spiritual for him is to be transcendent of religious conflict, of religious organizations. And he sees in his own life his parents who were in Ireland and on both sides of the religious divide between Protestants and Catholics, and their love for each other he saw as transcending those battles. And so for him, spirituality is the language that overcomes religion.
As mentioned, he's been doing his thing for a long time, a career that has spanned over 40 years, and he's not even 60 years old yet. He'll turn 60 on May the 10th. Not a big man at all. He's only 5'6", but in other ways, he is a giant.
He's definitely a giant in terms of celebrity activism and recognition for this caring version of rock that's very much a brand in which you consume through the music and also through products that have been part of the Red campaign, which brand particular products as Red, and then a portion of those proceeds goes to causes in Africa. So he's for sure a significant celebrity placeholder in that world.
Born as Paul David Hewson, Bono, as mentioned, turned 60 in May, and he's got a lot of titles: singer, songwriter, musician, venture capitalist, businessman, philanthropist, and the lead vocalist of U2 since 1978. The book from Dr. Chad Seals of the University of Texas, Religion Around Bono. Phil in Jefferson Terrace, you're on the air with Dr. Seals. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Jim. I just wanted to thank our governor. His action, I think, is in putting
all right,
us
well,
in,
how is this related to Bono?
Well, I think we need to change our things on capitalism. Our society isn't working. Health insurance.
All right. Thank you, Phil. Dr. Seals, this is a case in which Bono is one who has stood the test of time, and he's almost 60 years old. How long do you think he can go as a major player in the world of philanthropy and elsewhere?
That's a good question. The students I teach at the university are sort of less concerned with U2 or Bono now, so his sort of charismatic power seems to be fading in terms of a younger demographic. The reference your caller made to health insurance, I think, is a really important point. I mean, we look at this exact moment in which a lot of our inability as a nation to address this epidemic is the result of policies that begin in the 1980s, which erode public services, and you see those effects directly in Louisiana. You see the privatization of the public university at LSU. That part of those processes actually began at UT Austin, which is a long history. But it's important to recognize that the economic policies that Bono promotes are part of a larger project of neoliberal capitalism that are basically the privatization of public goods and services, and that corporations now take the place of government in distributing the gatekeepers of human rights and access to public goods like healthcare, housing, in particular. And if you look at the response to Katrina, it was Walmart who was much more effective on the ground than governments were. So it's an important point the caller makes.
Churches throughout the world, listener notes, have held U2-inspired revivalist services promoted as U2-carist, they've drawn many new churchgoers, re-engaged standing members. Tell us more about them.
Absolutely. One of the fascinating things about the history of U2 and Bono is that they come from an evangelical world that early on they're part of this group called Shalom. And then they get out of that world because they see it as too otherworldly, not connected to society. And it's almost derailed their goals of becoming this band, U2. And so they take the message of evangelicalism and then make it a secular thing, and in which Bono will tell the folks at the concerts, like, hey, do you know you're at church? This is church. So he turns the secular rock concert into a church service. So it's the message of evangelicalism, but in a way that's non-confessional. It doesn't require members to believe in a creed. It really just means to absorb the sound and absorb the sort of the secular message of supporting human rights across the globe. And so the U2carist service is the end result of years of Bono and U2 being resistant to organized religion, to creating the space of where these rock concerts are secular versions of worship services. And then big evangelical non-denominational churches start incorporating the music, the sound of U2, and reappropriating it in their worship services. And then finally, within the last decade, the Episcopal Church has taken not just mimicking or imitating the sound, but actually taking U2 songs and then playing them in their services and calling it, rather than Eucharist, they call it U2carist.
Religion Around Bono is the book from Dr. Chad Seals. We have about a minute left. Amy in St. Francisville has been waiting patiently. Hi, Amy. You're on with Dr. Seals. Good morning.
Hi. I'm so happy to speak with y'all. I was wondering if Dr. Seals could give some background around my favorite song, and Where the Streets Have No Name.
What about the relevance of that one?
Oh, absolutely. That's a great song to point out. One of the things about that song and others is many have argued that it's the secular hymn book now for the spiritual but not religious. It's a song about a transcendent place, whether it's heaven or beyond the present, and extremely popular. And one of the sort of the spiritual landscape of the Joshua Tree, that's one of the songs that really anchors that vision.
Well, Chad Seals, thank you for your visit today. Be safe. And the book is Religion Around Bono. It's certainly an interesting concept and a good read from a gentleman who knows this terrain quite well. Thank you, Dr. Seals.
Thanks, Jim. Have a good morning.
And you too. Thank you. Pardon the pun. And we wish you a very good weekend. Hope you stay safe. We're going to close with Ellis Marsalis, who died this week, 85 years old, in his hometown of New Orleans. He's a guy who kept the jazz flame alive in his time Here he was in 2012, just 8 years ago. 8 years ago at the Jazz Festival, Ellis Marcellus. And a reminder, the signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Until Monday, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.